This is an ABC podcast.
Live across Victoria.
On ABC Listen.
Your smart speaker.
And on your radio.
This is 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is where the conversation begins.
This is the Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
When is it okay to talk about each other's bodies? Is it okay to say, you look well, to your friend or your family member? Is that problematic if you're saying that, and you know this, because they've lost weight and that's the only reason why you're saying it? Do you comment on other people's weight to their face? Why? Maybe you don't even know that you're doing it. Let's face it, for many of us, and myself included, it's sort of how it came out of your mouth because you're trying to be complimentary. But is it? Is it appropriate? When is it appropriate? Is it ever appropriate to mention someone's weight to them? If you're worried about someone's body shape, or even if you're admiring of someone's body shape, how do we talk about that? How should we? I'm talking about this today on the Conversation Hour because social media has been awash with people talking about Ariana Grande. You know her, she's the singer, the performer, the actor. She's announced she's stepping back from public life for a while, and she has quoted, "The endless ongoing public scrutiny is a factor." Now, she doesn't say it's scrutiny of her weight, but there has been a lot of online commentary about her weight, which is, people are saying, low. Now, is it anyone's business? That's a parasocial relationship. Are we feeling okay about commenting on a celebrity's appearance? And how does that go into our normal lives? We don't know if she has an eating disorder. Is it any of our business? And when does it become our business? Is it when we see our daughters or our sons are looking at these figures who are famous? Or in fact, we're looking at their behaviour and we're worried. I'd love for you to join this conversation. It's not a simple one. It's not straightforward. It's not about the judgment. Well, it is about judgments potentially, but it's about how we move on together and how we use our words and why it is important. Tell me what you think, how you respond if someone talks about your weight as well. I'd love to hear your thoughts and your stories. Also, we spoke yesterday about how to look at house prices and what they're doing at the moment through the lens of you making your retirement plans, however long that is into the future, or your aged care plans. We're going to continue that conversation today about what to do, what are the options given this property market, as at the same time we know the cost of aged care is rising. We did hear yesterday we need not to catastrophize what's happening with house prices. It's all part of a long-term roller coaster, if you like, if you look at it and zoom out. We're all in the same boat also when it comes to the rising costs of aged care. So let's try and figure it out together on the Conversation Hour. We're going to speak to Seniors Australia about the options that we all might consider. Please join me in that conversation. I'd love to hear about that, your thoughts on aged care and the property market. But also, coming up next, when it is okay, is it okay to talk to each other's face about each other's bodies?
This is the Conversation Hour with Mary Guerin.
1300 222 774 is the number to call, or text 0437 774 774. As I said, it's not an easy conversation, but it is a really important one, and that is because we do have in our own lives, potentially, you are worried about someone and their attitude to eating. Maybe it's yourself as well. Words matter. This is, of course, about Ariana Grande stepping out of the public eye because of scrutiny. I'd love to know what you think we should be doing in terms of talking to each other about our bodies. But also here to answer some questions, Dr. Vivian Lewis is Assistant Professor of Psychology at the University of Canberra. Vivian, thanks for joining me.
My pleasure.
Why do words matter when we're talking about each other's bodies?
Well, words can be incredibly stigmatizing. They can be incredibly hurtful if we're not thoughtful about what we're actually saying, and particularly when we're commenting on people's bodies, it's one of those areas of comment that often people are very sensitive to, and particularly sensitive to any sort of form of criticism.
When is it okay to talk about each other's bodies then, and how do we do it? Because a lot of people listening will be saying, look, I'm only going to be talking about it, let's say this first instance, when I'm worried. What should be the form of words then? And how do we feel about that instinct?
Well, it's not necessarily about how do you comment about people's body. It's really thinking about the intent. Like, if you're about to make a comment about someone's body or appearance, why are you doing that? If you're concerned about a person, ask about how they're going. Ask, are they okay? You know, how have you been going? Is there anything happened? Are you worried? You know, just ask general questions about people's mental health and well-being. When we comment on things, like say even if we might want to give somebody a compliment, I often talk about talking about it in the context of other things. So we don't just comment on, say, positive things around people's bodies, but we also talk about their talents and their friendliness and how much we like them. So it's in the context of lots of different things. The problem is often when we're only commenting on people's appearance or only commenting on people's bodies, and people become aware that their body is becoming the topic of conversation.
You talk about the compliments there and so forth, so there might be concern, there might be admiration. But really, is it anyone's business what someone else's body looks like? When is it someone's business?
Well, it's not really our business to comment on people, generally speaking. And I think that's the thing, you know, if we're worried about someone, no matter what it is, you know, we're looking at them and we think, oh, they don't look very well, or someone looks really stressed out. Just, again, just ask them how they are. Ask about their general mental health and well-being, which doesn't actually require any comments about what they look like or their appearance.
Well, and in fact, it doesn't matter if what the body shape is, whether it's smaller or not.
Yes, because I think often people make assumptions about people's appearance of what that must mean. So someone, whether we think they're thin or they're larger or what have you, and we equate that with meaning something, that someone's appearance means the state of their health or the state of their mental health, and it really doesn't. So it's trying to get away from using people's size, shape, weight as markers of health and well-being, and really focusing on the internal. So how is somebody's body actually functioning? How are they going? Are they free from disease? Are they generally well in themselves? They're markers. And very much so in the sort of medical world, we're trying to get away from making judgments about people's health and well-being based on their size, and really thinking about internal health and well-being, and how someone's actually feeling within themselves.
Mm. We're talking about whether it is okay ever to talk about each other's bodies and the words we might use. Dr. Vivian Lewis is with me. Things have changed over time, obviously, community standards, although many people might say when it comes to people like Ariana Grande, over generations we've also looked at celebrities, that this idea that we can comment on public figures who won't hear our comments with very little risk involved, we can just have that chit-chat as gossip. Has that parasocial relationship, has that opened the door to us feeling like we can say whatever we like to whomever we like?
I think half the time we don't actually think through about the impact of our comments, because it's not just that we might comment on a celebrity and whether they see that or not, but it's like if we're doing that, we're actually doing that to people we know. The fact that we might be making a negative comment about a celebrity, actually the people in our lives hear that and can actually internalise that themselves, that we can actually be criticising our friends and family members.
Well, indeed, and I guess vulnerable family members as well, including children.
Yes, and that's the thing is children especially hear adults talking negatively about people's weight and size and shape or and they take that on board and then they start to question their own weight, shape and size and whether there's a problem there. So I think it's generally just trying to stay away from, first of all, making unkind comments about people generally speaking, but particularly about people's appearance. It's one of those areas where people almost feel like it's their right to comment because someone might be a public figure or what have you. And it's actually really thinking about the broader impact of that.
You say some people might think it's their right to comment. Is it also a cultural, potentially even a generational lens that we can add to this, that once upon a time it was considered a compliment to talk about losing weight? And if so, how much has the dial changed?
I think young people these days are probably much more aware of the negative impact of commenting on people's appearance and particularly weight. And you actually do find that sometimes it's actually older generations who are more likely to feel that they should comment or it's okay to comment because they very much grew up in that era of, yes, losing weight was complimented on. People were quite frequently dieting, being overweight or obese was seen as a very negative thing. And thinness was praised. So sometimes it's not always this generation. It's the, people who've grown up in eras where there's been a lot of diet culture. And I think these days the good thing about younger people is they're a little bit more aware of the harmful effects. And they can actually pull older people up on comments that they might make about people's appearance, which are not very kind.
So your overall tip for relating to people around us when it comes to our bodies?
I think it's if just generally just commenting, it's nice to see you, I really enjoy your company. How have you been? What's been going on in your life? There's no need to comment on someone's appearance.
Dr. Vivian Lewis, thank you so much for your insights today.
My pleasure.
Dr. Vivian Lewis, who is from the University of Canberra. Tracy in Moonee Ponds, what are your thoughts?
Well, I am of the older generation, and I agree that the younger generation are more, attuned to being positive about body image. And then it goes across male and female. But I think you can say you're looking fabulous today. I really don't think it's a problem to say you look, and even occasionally to point out someone who is looking incredibly good, you look amazing. Yeah,
but fabulous is a great word, Tracy, because I do feel that it transcends and avoids what we're talking about, doesn't it? It's not about your body. It's just your vibe. You're looking fabulous.
Exactly. And yes, someone can then be self-deprecating if they want to. They can ignore the compliment or they can actually smile and feel really good about themselves because you've noticed. But at the end of the day, you have to follow Socrates' rules, and which is, to only speak when it's true, when it's kind and when it's useful. And I think telling someone they look fabulous is all of those.
Oh, Tracy, I love that you've brought wisdom, even of the ancients, to us, but that is very modern wisdom as well. Thank you for calling. Really appreciate it. Karen in Ballarat, what are your thoughts?
Hi, I am a 6'1" female and I come from a pretty tall family. And I think since I have been 12 years old, it's almost welcome to comment on people's height, and it's never been judged that that's an issue. So I'm glad we're having the conversation when it comes to weight as well.
So, Karen, are you saying that because you were tall, that was always something that was commented on? And I guess what I'm asking is, how did that make you feel?
I think as a 14, 15, 16-year-old girl, when you're a lot taller than the boys, it's not always a welcome comment. And I think, again, that's just something that it's been free-for-all to comment on height and not always welcome. Comments, you're huge, you should be the ruck for our footy team, those sort of comments. Yeah, I think I'm glad we're having the conversation.
Karen, I'm really appreciative of that contribution. It wasn't something I was thinking about, but it also has been echoed on text. Someone talking about having body image issues from childhood, about being freckled as well. Words matter, don't they? And we will get to exactly why they matter with my next guest. But first, Beck has also called in from Pascoe Vale. What did you want to add, Beck?
I think I really appreciate what the other woman contributed about her height. I have tall girls, and the number of compliments that we have regarding, I guess their bodies is something as well that I'm really mindful. I run a Pilates studio, and I'm really mindful of in the language that we use to talk to women in the space or just people in general about the capability of their body and not how it looks. Many of the women I have that come and see me are in midlife, so bodies start to change. Pilates has been, marketed very much as that sort of thin, frail aesthetic that we see online. The reality is that's not the bodies that we have in front of us. And I think it's really important.
So I was just going to interrupt. Apologies for interrupting, but I'm interested because of this space, because it often breeds an intimacy, particularly between women when they're talking about fitness and bodies. Mm-hmm. Is it difficult to draw that line in between talking about your body that you're working on with someone else and this potentially more harmful stuff?
I think we talk about what our bodies can do rather than how they look. Mm. And I think... taking the importance of women, it's important that women take up space. We shouldn't be minimizing who we are and what our bodies look like. And as we get older, our bodies change. And it's about bringing that acceptance that, that bodies do change, bodies do look different, and it's the capability of those bodies that matter, not
that's
how
right.
they look.
It's what they can do. That's a really good perspective. Thank you, Bec. And Hattie in Churnside, what did you want to add? Hi, Hattie.
Hi, mine was probably a little bit more from the first person that was saying from a medical point of view that they want to look at the inside and make sure that you're all healthy and everything like that. When I was actually pregnant, I've always been a larger person and my weight has always been a subject of everyone, basically. It was amazing the scrutiny that I got from the medical point of view when they asked me about my lifestyle and if I was healthy. And it's like they almost didn't believe me. And then when I did fall pregnant, they tested me multiple times for pregnancy diabetes because it's like they almost didn't believe that I was healthy, even though I was slightly larger. And I thought that was a bit of a different point of view because I don't know. It made me feel worse when I went to my appointments that they kept questioning how big I was.
Yeah.
Hattie, they wanted to be careful as well, because obviously you want that as well. But it was like they almost didn't believe that I could be healthy and be larger.
Hattie, that's really interesting. And I am positive that there'd be women nodding their heads listening to this, saying they had similar experiences. As I said, it's not a straightforward conversation and there's not one answer. But here to talk about exactly why it's important. There are some texts saying, look, why are we talking about this? Can't we just say people look well? It is important because a lot of people do suffer from eating disorders. Danny Rollins is the CEO of Butterfly Foundation, and she's been listening to all of you and this conversation. Danny, thanks for joining us. For anyone who might doubt why this is an important conversation, can you say about the prevalence? Can you talk about the prevalence of eating disorders?
Well, I can, and thanks for having me. We know that in Australia that we have an estimated 1.1 million people experiencing an eating disorder, which can look many ways. So there are many different diagnoses and experiences with an eating disorder. We know that there's a far greater number of people who are experiencing disordered eating. And so I guess the important part in all of this is that link back to, I guess, body dissatisfaction, but also the influence of these extreme thin ideals and even just thin ideals and the pressure that places on people and their relationship with their body, and then obviously how that can influence their relationship with eating and movement, their mental health, and how that can move somebody up a pathway towards disordered eating or an eating disorder.
And we're not just talking about thinness there either, are we, when it comes to eating disorders?
No, we're not. Anorexia nervosa is actually one of the lowest prevalence amongst all of the eating disorders that can be experienced. We know that binge eating disorder is actually of the highest. So, and that can be experienced in people of bodies of all different shapes and sizes. So it's really important that, and I guess to the caller in before, is that we can't actually tell what someone's health is or what they're experiencing based on how they look or what their body size is.
You're listening to Danny Rollins, CEO of Butterfly Foundation, who deals with this sort of issue all the time. You're listening to The Conversation Hour. Call me 1300 222 774. Denny, this on text from Kelly. This is a tough one, Kelly says. I have three daughters, my youngest really struggling with disordered eating and body image. We've spoken about Ariane's, I guess she's saying body, together. How can we not? It's frightening. She's talking about seeing a rib cage and pretending it's not an issue. Her text goes on. What would you have to say to people like Kelly and Kelly herself?
I think we have to absolutely acknowledge the significance of imagery like this and just what that can actually do for a person, particularly vulnerable young people who are really struggling with either their eating or their relationship with their body. So it's really important that we don't just dismiss or brush aside the reality of what exposure to imagery like this can actually do. This is less about, I guess, Ariana and her relationship with her body and what's going on there, but the broader issue around just that strong influence. So it's important for parents to acknowledge the feelings, not to dismiss them, but also to have really kind and open, curious, non-shaming conversations about these and to be curious about what that means for the person. And obviously parents can't do this alone. So if they are really struggling to find the words or to know what to do, Butterfly Foundation has a heap of resources on our website to help kind of guide conversations, as well as our national helpline, and it doesn't have to be. I think we all worry it has to be really bad before we do something. But, you know, contacting the helpline and saying, I need some guidance around a conversation is a really, really powerful step for parents to make so they can have positive conversations with their kids.
Yeah, and I'll repeat that helpline as well at the end. But just really quickly, Danny, just to finish on, if we are also worried about our own daughters or sons, what's a very quick tip for how we then approach it in our words with them if we are worried and we don't want to double down on ideas about weight?
I think it's that compassion piece, leaning in and asking and being curious and you know, are you okay? I'm concerned about you. You know, I'm here to help you. I love you. And just obviously knowing that you're on their team. It's actually not about how they look, it's about how they're experiencing the world and how maybe their relationship with their body is impacting the different things in their life, school, studies, friendships, and together trying to find and work towards a solution, which can take a little bit of the fear out because it is quite terrifying for parents and young people themselves. But know that you're not alone and that reaching out and seeking support is obviously really, really encouraged.
Danny, thank you so much for helping us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Danny Rowlands is CEO of Butterfly Foundation. The Butterfly National Helpline is 1-800-334-673, 1-800-334-673, or, of course, just look up butterfly.org.au. We will keep this conversation coming throughout the Conversation Hour. Lots of texts and calls coming in, so I would like to circle back to them. But we have got a packed hour. We will be talking about news that you might have seen about Fitzroy Community School. That is coming up. But next, also, let's keep talking about that cost of aged care in the light of what's happening on the property market.
I'm Sana Kadar. Join me to explore the psychology behind the biggest questions in our lives, from relationships to stress levels to solving crime.
Your lie detection ability approximates chance.
Search All in the Mind on ABC Listen.
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
Well, we were talking yesterday about this correction, some people saying softening drop. It's not to be catastrophized. There's movements in the values of our houses. What does it mean when we are planning not just for retirement but specifically for aged care when we know that the costs are going up? We wanted to check in with Chris Grace, who is CEO of National Seniors Australia. Hi, Chris. How are you going?
Good, Maury. Good morning, Mary. Good to be with you.
Good to be with you too. Now, are you getting these questions about what we do with aged care from people who are worried by what they see on the property market?
This is something in which that people are sort of, I guess, when a trigger event occurs, suddenly it becomes very much in focus and suddenly they have to, decisions have to be made very quickly. And we're finding that in particular that folk that are connected to someone who is in need of aged care, so typically that's a carer or a family member, and so they're the ones that are sort of making the inquiries at the moment in trying to provide that support. And they are watching as to what's happening, because the family home is having to do a lot of the lifting, Mary, in terms of, you know, that the government's putting a lot of focus in on the family home, and this supposed sort of this wealth which is attached to it. It's got to do a lot of lifting, and aged care is just one of the things that that the family home is being sort of looked upon as this, you know, pot of so-called wealth that can be tapped into to fund this sort of stuff. And from our perspective, we're concerned with that general narrative, because there's not a lot of it to go around when you look at if it's supposed to fund aged care, health care, just general property maintenance, and also at the end of the day, if it's supposed to provide an inheritance as well. There's a lot of expected of that family home, that's for sure.
Yeah. You need a big, valuable home to cover all of those things. You're exactly right, and that's if you're lucky enough to have one. 1300 222 774 is the number to call. We're talking again about what we can do, how the options we should be considering when it comes to aged care in the light of this property market. Chris Grice, what do you say then to people who are looking at aged care costs going up, what their options might be?
So there are two in terms of residential aged care, because in Australia at the moment we have three care systems, and that's being transitioned over time to basically be two systems, where you've got a supported home process where, you know, we're allowing folk to be actual age in place. That is what they want, and the government's responding to that and putting packages in place to provide that support. But part of that is that they have to co-contribute to that care. And then also we have ultimately residential aged care. And to fund residential aged care, there's two ways in which that a person can contribute. There can be a situation where you've got two funding models, a daily accommodation payment that they can make, mm-hmm. or a residential accommodation deposit. Now, with a residential accommodation deposit, that amount that it currently is to what is the maximum refundable accommodation deposit at the moment is $789,686. That's the maximum amount that a residential aged care provider can charge without special approval. Now, if you look at it from the point of view, if you had to support two people as far as residential aged care is concerned, and there had to be two separate rooms, they couldn't actually find a room where two people could stay together, that's over $1.5 million that someone would have to find for residential aged care. And that does not even take into account basic daily fees, hoteling contributions, non-clinical care contributions. So, and that can be as much as around $72,000 a year to fund that. And so this whole narrative that the government's sort of saying is, oh, no worries, the family home, we can just tap into that and you can just sort of fund your aged care that way. We need to, and people need to be prepared that this is going to cost a lot of money to actually provide good quality care going forward. And so the earlier you can prepare for it and understand how the system works, the better outcome you'll have.
Earlier preparation, the key. Chris Grice is the CEO of National Seniors Australia on the Conversation Hour. Chris, I've heard a lot of chat about, well, what about reverse mortgages? That's the way to go. That's always been a lever to pull. What does it mean in today's market?
So much better situation in terms of those equity release or reverse mortgage style products. Again, you're expecting the family home to do it,
yeah.
That lifting again in terms of equity. And clearly these days, even if you have a sort of a drop or adjustment in home prices, these sorts of products now have this no negative equity. So they won't allow, based on the suburbs that you're living in, they sort of won't allow people to get into that position where negative equity is a potential risk.
Mm.
So that's a great thing that, like, many years ago, there were a number of the reverse mortgage style products where there were issues where there was negative equity, and that was a terrible outcome for many older Australians.
Mm.
So the products themselves are much better than they were. They are much better now than what they were previously.
Chris, great speaking with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary.
Chris Grice is the CEO of National Seniors Australia. We will, of course, keep across that topic. It's on everyone's minds. Property market does touch many of us in many different ways. Also today, we are talking about if and when it is ever okay to talk about each other's bodies. David in Ballarat, what did you want to say about that?
Hi. Yeah, I just wondered if there were other guys out there that have the same kind of problem that I do, where, you know, people say things like, oh, gee, you've lost weight. And I feel good about that because they're telling me that, you know, I'm looking better.
Mm.
But I don't know what to say.
So you're taking it as a compliment?
Yes, yes.
Mm. And so you don't mind?
I am, but it's not really, because they're basically saying that I used to be fat. Do you know what I mean?
I see what you're saying. And then if they're only telling you you look great when you've lost weight, yeah,
yes,
that's what we're talking about.
Yes, that's exactly right, yes.
David, I think you've hit the nail on the head. And I confess, I have said it in the past, I have learned to change. I'm trying to change. I know we've had callers already saying, yep, they've changed. The young people know a little bit better than us. David, thank you. Carolyn in Melbourne, what did you want to say?
Oh, I just, that lady who rang up about being too tall, you know, the other option, the other side of the ledger is when you're too short. You know, people tell you that you're short. So,
well, that's the thing. What's too short? What's too tall?
Yeah, so like a classic example of that is John Pesciuto being attacked by Daniel Andrews for his height in Parliament.
So I don't remember politicians, that.
I remember it very clearly.
Right.
I don't think politicians should be allowed to attack each other on their personal attributes like height. So I think that was pretty repulsive of Daniel Andrews, frankly.
Yeah, Caroline, that's really interesting. I don't remember that particular incident, but, yeah, it would be courting really strong community opinion if you were to do that in politics these days, I think, I would hope, compared to previous generations. Thanks, Carolyn. Graham in Bond Beach, what did you want to say about it?
Yeah, there's a comment that my father taught me. I was probably only about 12. I can't remember. It was sticks and stones will break your bones, but names will never hurt you. But, as I was saying to the producer, it's in the perception. It's the perception of the receiver. You don't know what they'll say. You don't know how they'll feel. And that's important in life, I think.
That's right. So
there's another one. Think before you speak.
Think before you speak, and just lay off talk about the bodies.
It's very hard now because I've said perceptions. You know,
yeah.
You don't know how they'll receive it.
That's
right.
I think
you can probably only say it when you know them very well. They're a close friend. I'd like to think it's a compliment to them, but you don't know again.
You don't know again.
It's also, Mary, that if I was to meet you, you wouldn't know what to do with the compliments I'd give you. You've got a lovely speaking voice. You're obviously a caring person, and this subject's very interesting.
I will take that any time, Graham. I'm telling you right now, I'm taking it well. Thank you for that. That's kind. And, yeah, it's really interesting, Graham. You're right. You don't know what's going on in someone else's mind, whether or not you're the receiver or the giver of those comments. I will love to keep on with these calls and texts about this topic in this conversation hour. You're on 774 ABC Melbourne and Victoria. We will get to other things, though, including coming up next. You may have read about, we will be asking the reporter behind this story, the disturbing historical allegations about Fitzroy Community School.
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
On the Conversation Hour, we are going to be looking at a story that you might have seen online. An ABC investigation can reveal multiple child sexual abuse allegations over decades at the alternative Fitzroy Community School in Melbourne. The allegations are made by six women who are either students at the school or were in the care of the school's founders. And those founders were the married couple, Faye Berryman and Philip O'Carroll. And a warning that this segment will include disturbing details of those allegations. Victorian investigative reporter Josie Taylor joins me now in the studio. Thanks for joining me, Josie. What is the Fitzroy Community School and what's being alleged?
This has been a really influential school in Melbourne, Mary. It is. It was set up originally in the home of that married couple, Faye Berryman and Philip O'Carroll. They set it up in 1976, and it's quite recognisable to people who travel down Brunswick Street. It's got a big rainbow on the facade of their terrace home. There's three terraces in a row there that are all part of the school and that associated companies. They also have a campus in Thornbury. But all of our allegations are centred around the Brunswick Street campus, which was the family home of Faye Berryman and Philip O'Carroll for many years, and they established it in 1976 in what they wanted to say as it was would be an oasis from the constraints of the normal mainstream education, where children could be free to express themselves and to learn real life skills. But what this year-long investigation has uncovered is multiple allegations over numerous decades. Six women have come forward with a variety of sexual abuse or grooming allegations at the school at various points in the school's history. If we go back to 1976, two sisters have come forward and spoken to the ABC about their alleged experience. Kirsten was a student, she says, at the school at the age of just four in 1976, and her sister and she spent time with Philip O'Carroll and Faye Berryman in their home in 1976, where they say they saw Philip O'Carroll with a child in the bath who was touching his genitals, and that they allege that the couple, the founders of this school, also had sex in front of children.
Mm. Josie, what have the founders said in response to these allegations?
They haven't said anything, and we have tried multiple times, Mary. We've gone to them via email, to the school, at which Faye Berryman still teaches and sits on its board. We have gone to them individually and to the school and to the board and in person, hand-delivered letters, and we've had no response at all. What we do know and what's on the public record is that in 2006, these two sisters, Kirsten and Gretel, who are only using their first names, they went to police as adults when they found out that the couple was still running a school. We've obtained a police statement made by Kirsten and a police incident report from 2006, which outlines the police investigation at the time. A detective did go and interview Mr. O'Carroll and Ms. Berryman, and they strenuously denied the allegations. They said it was fanciful. They said it couldn't have happened because they say they didn't set up the school until 1980, which is true. They didn't register the school until 1980, but in their own books, their published works, they refer to the school as operating since 1976, and they also say that they took on students in 1976.
And police found no evidence of an offence being committed at that time. What have other women said about their allegations as well, Josie?
We've had two other women who were students in the 1980s at the school who've declined to be identified, and they've expressed different allegations separate to the sisters. They also say that Philip O'Carroll was sexually inappropriate with them, that he showed them crotchless underwear and referenced having sex with his wife to them in his bedroom, which was also the school, inside the school building. He also, they allege, had what he called cuddle time with girls, which was a special thing that they were chosen for and that they saw as a reward in a way. They allege that one woman in particular alleges that during a school camp, the girls were taken into a top bunk by Philip O'Carroll, who was wearing a singlet and underpants at the time, and showed them a Japanese pornography comic while cuddling them.
Mm. You're listening to Josie Taylor, who's an ABC investigative reporter, about disturbing allegations, historical allegations concerning the Fitzroy Community School. Josie, what's been the response from the school?
Nothing so far. We have, as I said, tried repeatedly, and I say this with, I just want to underline this because we have been researching this story for a long time and spoken to more than 80 former students and parents at the school, and we have repeatedly tried to engage with the school and to get their perspective on this, and that has been rebuffed or just not responded to. So we know the school has charity status. It has a board in terms of its governance, and that's chaired by Dr. Claire Myers, who is a Melbourne gynaecologist and surgeon. Now, so she has not responded to these allegations, but 2 days after we sent the board detailed questions regarding the sexual abuse allegations, she sent a letter to parents announcing that the school was engaging a private firm in relation to the numerous allegations at the school. The letter didn't mention the sexual abuse allegations, but it did refer to the ongoing Victorian Institute of Teaching investigation, which is investigating physical and psychological abuse allegations that we've previously reported on, that is also involving Faye Berryman's sons, Nick and Tim Berryman, who've been long-time teachers at the school. Nick Berryman suspended at the minute from teaching, and Tim Berryman, who was the principal, has stepped down from teaching. But in the letter to parents, Dr. Myers refers to the school's operations continuing as normal. She made no reference to the allegations against Faye Berryman, who still teaches at the school and sits on its board. But she said, quote, "Even in the midst of hostile media attention and ongoing scrutiny, the vibrant day-to-day at school is a joyful reminder of why Fitzroy Community School continues to exist."
Where to from here, Jessie?
There's a number of investigations happening. We know that Victoria Police is investigating separate physical and abuse allegations, so not connected to any of what I have outlined, but there is a current police investigation relating to alleged sexual and physical abuse at the school between 2009 and 2012. We have gone to police and asked them, will you now take these allegations on, and have been told just this morning that there is no need for a task force at this stage by Victoria Police. However, we have made them aware of these allegations. We also know that, as I said, the Victorian Institute of Teaching has an active investigation underway into a number of teachers at the school, and the VRQA, which is the education watchdog that sits in the education department, they have an ongoing investigation, which they say is still active.
Josie, thank you for guiding us through that reporting today.
Thanks, Mary.
Josie Taylor, ABC investigative reporter, and you'll see that on the 7pm news tonight and tomorrow night. There's also an online piece as well. And, of course, if this story has brought up difficult feelings or reactions, please reach out for support. There's Lifeline. That's 13 11 14 13 11 14. There's Kids Helpline, 1 800 551 800. 1-800-RESPECT, that is, of course, 1-800-737-732. And just to underline, these are allegations, they are disputed. Josie and her team spoke to more than 80 past and present students from Fitzroy Community School that lies behind this reporting, obtaining records where possible as well. That's a continuing story on ABC News. This is 774 ABC Melbourne and Victoria. I want to get to more of your calls about proper conversations, but also let's change gears a little, shall we? Quite dramatically. Are you afraid that your cat won't cope with living indoors? This is, you know, when we talk about things that we shouldn't be thinking, perhaps this whole trope about cats needing to be outdoors, there are some people who are still afraid that they can't move their outdoor cats indoors. Well, fear not. There's new research to say it is cool for cats.
This is The Conversation Hour with Mary Guerin.
And Davy Crockett rides around and says it's cool for cats, it's cool for cats.
It's cool for cats, apparently, to move from the outside to the inside. Yes, do you fear your kitty getting snitty if they are moved indoors? We are changing gears. As I said on The Conversation Hour, 1300 222 774. I know out there you are listening and you have moved your outdoor cat inside. I can tell you I've done it and it was not at all a problem. And yet there is this persistent belief that cats won't be moved indoors, that we couldn't do it to protect our wildlife, even though we are told that we should. I'd love to hear from you. 1300 222 774 is the number to call. Dr. Julia Henning is from Adelaide University's School of Animal and Veterinary Sciences and brings us a little new research to tell us that we can do this, and it is cool for cats. Hello, Julia. Thanks for joining me.
Hi.
Tell us about what your research found.
So what we found is that generally cats adjust fairly well. Usually it's their people that find it more of a challenge.
And why is that?
Well, I think, you know, a lot of the behaviours that cats have that are, you know, instinctual and quite natural don't really necessarily work so well in a human home. We kind of expect them to behave in a certain way that suits us, and sometimes, unless we give them the right enrichments at home, they're not going to do that. For instance, scratching the furniture, completely normal for cats because they, you know, they need to maintain their claws and stretch out. But when they do it on our furniture, we don't really like it. So as long as we're giving them a scratch post, we're meeting their needs and we're solving our issue. But for a lot of people, there's not a lot of information out there that you need to do those things. And so it can end up with cats doing totally normal things that tend to annoy us.
1300 222 774. If you have done this, it wasn't a problem at all, or maybe you did have problems. I'd love to hear your stories as well. Julia Henning is with us from Adelaide University, who's been looking at this. You found that this adaptation from cats, by cats, is pretty quick. Just a matter of a few weeks.
Yeah, we were more surprised by that, actually. But yeah, it seemed that for most people, cats tended to adjust pretty quickly.
You were surprised by that?
Yeah. Well, I think there's been a lot of talk for a long time about how it's very hard to transition cats who have had outdoor access indoors. So for a lot of people, they tend to wait until they have a new cat and then they'll start them indoors, which is definitely the easiest way. But what this study shows is that actually it might not be that difficult for cats that have had outdoor access to get used to an indoor life, as long as we're giving them things to make sure that they're happy inside.
Mm. On text, I'm getting a couple of different opinions here. Someone saying, absolutely, it's true. I didn't find any problems with it. Someone else is saying that they are a breeder and it's not that easy. If someone is having problems, what should they be looking to do? You've been talking about enrichment, but how do they actually assess what the problem is?
Yeah, I mean, cats are unique individuals just like we are, and there are certainly some cats that will find it difficult to transition. We found that in our study too, that there were a small subset of cats that did find it more difficult. However, one thing that is a little makes it difficult to tell whether it's actually the cat or the transition is that often when cats sort of meow or they appear stressed to us, what we do is we let them outside again. And that reinforces to the cat that if they complain enough, they will eventually be let outside. So we're actually kind of making it more difficult for them to transition, because every time we're trying to keep them indoors, they just have to complain a bit more and then we'll let them out. Mm. So really, you know, you would need to try ignoring those and giving them something to distract them inside, like playing with them or giving them a treat, and give them time to transition. And then if they're still seeming very stressed and it's not working out, and there are, you know, lots of reasons why that might be. Maybe you've got like a toddler in the house that is stressing out the baby. Maybe, you know, you've got a dog and a cat that are incompatible. There are plenty of reasons that it might be hard. In those cases, it's best to talk to a behaviorist or your vet and kind of figure out what the challenge is for you and ways to work around that.
Ways around. Julia, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Dr. Julia Henning is from Adelaide University's School of Animal and Veterinary Sciences. Jeanette in Mildura. You've got an indoor cat?
Yes, I have. I've always had indoor cats. But I think one of the biggest factors that people find really difficult in keeping their cat inside is dealing with the kitty litter.
So that's about humans, not about the cats.
Yes. My cat tells me when she's done a number two, and unless I go and clean it straight away, I don't get any peace.
Oh, so. I love it. Oh, Jeanette, it sounds like you've got quite the conversation going with your cat there. That's the advantage to having them indoors. Thank you. James, you wanted to talk about aged care. We were talking about that earlier.
Yeah, off. But boy, I'd have to comment on what an extraordinary range of diverse range of topics you've got on this morning.
It's been the journey, hasn't it, James?
But my mum and dad got, well, as they were aging, did some extraordinary things, including taking my camping trailer to Darwin. But when they were in a house which was just not age friendly, and it was quite clear that they were either going to go into aged care or what we did was happily put quite a bit of money into rebuilding the house into an age-friendly house under what's called a granny flat agreement with the federal government, allowing that to occur.
And that's a
and
solution.
The aged care services and the medical facilities that they received in home care was exemplary. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
The Port Ferry Hospital, hands up to them. But the
Maybe that's a way of doing it, James, just to try and lean into making the house better.
Well, it was, but then we had the state government come through and say, well, that's now an investment property, even though we weren't charging rent. And we had to pay land tax on that aged care, that house, which enabled them to stay out of aged care.
Oh, James, it is really complicated. I'm sorry we're running up to the news time. Thank you. We will keep on this conversation because it is tricky. And also I want to get back to cats as well. We've just got so many texts coming through for that still. Greg, really quickly, in East Elstonwick, cat runs are the answer. You build them.
Yeah, I do. I build them and I sell products for people to do it themselves. But the thing that I've observed with my own cats and my customers is that cats really learn change really well, but they do need a little bit of time. So patience is important. The lady who rang up about the litter is fantastic. All my customers love it. Once I build them a cat run, put a cat door in, cats are in and out and say, please, no litter. It's like when the youngest child is out of nappies.
Okay. I didn't even realise that. Greg, you've opened up my eyes to a different way of dealing with the cats. Thank you. We are running out of time. Thank you so much for a really, as I said to James, quite the journey in this conversation hour today. Thank you, and keep those conversations coming. If you have any more comments, conversationhour@abc.net.au. If you want to listen again, we're on the ABC Listen app. Talk again to you tomorrow.